Edith Bailey is being interviewed by Renee Garalick for Concord's Oral History Program, sponsored by the Concord Historical Commission. The interview is being held at her home at 119 Nimrod Drive on September 12, 1977. Mrs. Bailey is 75 years old. Would you describe your early recollections of West Concord, then known as Concord Junction, and tell us how it got the name of Concord Junction?
Yeah, well, I can tell you how name of town, this end of the town was named Concord Junction. In my early days, railroads were, of course, the chief means of transportation. And we did have street railway too, but because of the railroads, the town was named Concord Junction. There was there were two divisions of the Boston and Maine Railroad. The Fitchburg Division, which is very well known and is still in existence, also the Nashua Division, which went from the South Station up through into Nashua, New Hampshire. And then that followed the New York, New Haven, and Hartford line until it separated up in Acton. There were approximately 125 trains a day between the three lines, but it was the junction of the two railroads that gave, that was only the name of the post office, of course, and the area. We're still part of Concord. Junction was always the business area of the town. Would you like me to describe some of the buildings that were here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When I was a child, of course, many have developed late, beginning at the bridge on Commonwealth Avenue over the little brook, up one side and then up the other. First was the Pail Factory, was on the left. This was practically a ruin when I was a child, but it was on the side where the dam is. That furnished the power for the Pail Factory. And opposite it was the Canning Factory. And while I was still small, that went out of business and was taken over by Mr. Tolman and Mr. Connors, who adapted it for a laundry. And that burned some years later. I can't remember the exact year. I was probably about 10. And then he built another building and further over on the river, away from Commonwealth Avenue, for a laundry. And after that, that too got on fire. The equipment was not as safety as they had no safety appliances on it. And after that was burned, he moved the laundry to they moved the laundry to Maynard. It's called Middlesex Laundry, and Dan Hayes and Mr. Lambert bought it and converted it into the Concord Garnet. And of course that existed for a great long while. Then there was a great open space there, and a great long building from Commonwealth Avenue back towards the river housed the, in the front, it was sort of a general store. They called it the furniture store, but he had toys and everything like that. He didn't have groceries. I mean, aside from that, it was really a general store. And in fact, attached to it was his livery stable. And behind that was the blacksmith shop. And one night, about 1 o'clock, that all burned. And then came that double house, which is still there, and which Jones Upholstery has added. And that house was a barn that was built for the Blumine Manufacturing Company, but never used. It was moved over there, and a double house made out of it. And that's where I was born. We were the first family to live it, on one side of it. And that's where I was born. The other side, I think the family's name was Eisner. Then that next building, you go up a few steps, and then there's a big plate glass window. There's a beauty shop there now. That was the bakery, and the people who ran the bakery lived over it. There were living quarters up there. There were living quarters up there. I don't know what it is now. And the first people that owned that I remember was Arthur Adams. We all called him Peanut. He was such a little fellow. And then came John Donovan, and then after that was Frank Layton, and then it was abandoned as a bakery, and the bakery moved to another location. Then the next tall building, where the West Concord 5 and 10 is now, was the Potomio block. And Salvatore Potomio was in the fruit business, and they had a big fruit store in the front of that, and he and his family lived in the back. There were several rooms, it was a big apartment. On the first floor was Harry Fritz, the tailor, and his family, and the third floor was more or less transient rentals. Then there was an empty lot between that and the next building. On that, I'm just going up one side of the street, mm-hmm. so it's easier. There was an empty lot, because that has been built in since. And then came the building that is now the auto parts place, was a dry goods store and a regular department store type thing. And Mr. London and Mr. Erdang ran that. I worked there when I was in high school. And there was an apartment above that, too. Then there was another half lot, sort of, in between that and the association building. The association building, I don't know that it was called that at the time, but it burned in September 1903. My father had a lot of stories to tell about that. And John Fitzgerald was there, and he got into difficulties with the firemen. He always went to all the farmers, all the fires in town when he was staying here, because they lived here in Concord.
That was the famous Honey Fitz.
Honey Fitz, mm-hmm. yes. And he and the fire chief didn't get on very well, and they had a little dispute. And then it was rebuilt. I only remember it as it is now. It was rebuilt, not as it is now, but as it was rebuilt. And because I was only a year old when it burned. And the first floor housed the Rexall store, which Otis Whitney's father ran, C. Hayden Whitney. And beside that was the post office, where it still is. On the next floor, there were some offices. One of them was occupied by Dr. Wendell F. Davis, the dentist, and the other one was the, I don't know what you call it, the power, I guess, where Mrs. Leland taught piano lessons. And on that floor it was the Association Hall, where they had the movies and the dances and the minstrel shows and any other entertainment that was held there. While the Union Church was being remodeled, they had the services there, and they had the May festivals and the Christmas trees and everything in that big hall, which had a balcony. And that was the whole core of our social life. On the third floor, it was really the fourth floor, because between the balcony and the, it made it two flights up between the second and fourth floor, was the Oddfellows Hall on one half and the dining room on the other. And that was used for all the fraternal organizations, and not only the Oddfellows and Rebecca's, but the Eastern Star and the Catholic Daughters and some organization the Reformatory had. And they all met up there. And then Blueens set back where it still is. It's now, I don't know what it is, it was a ski binding place. Now I don't know who's, well, the printing press is in there. Mm-hmm. The Minuteman Press is in there. There's diamonds on it now, that's right. Well, that was there, and of course that was a Blueen manufacturing. That's where most of us kids worked summertimes and after school and all that sort of thing. It was a mail order place, and we could get part-time work in there. And that is a very old business. Probably my brother told you that his wife's uncle was one of the founders of it. And in front of that is now what is Acadia Company, which was a garage, one of the very first garages we had in town. And in front of that, there was a little luncheonette. These were really on between Commonwealth Avenue and down what is now Beharrell Street, down in there, because that's all developed in there. So that is all practically new. Then if we come back to the bridge and from the Pail Factory down, there was still that little square there. And there was an old red house there that was torn down to make a parking area for what is now a garage, the Chrysler dealer. But there was those buildings are all, well, we played, while they were building them, we used to play in them. So, I mean, they're probably 50 or 60 years old, but they are, from the point of view of my childhood, they are fairly recent. The house on the corner, of Bradford Street and Commonwealth Avenue was built for the Whitneys, and that's where Otis Whitney lived, and I used to push him around his baby carriage. He doesn't remember it, but I do. And, of course, in back of that on Bradford Street was the Allen Share Company. I think that must have been built around 1908, because I know we played over there, and I'm sure my folks never knew it, because they never would let us do that sort of thing if they knew anything about it. And then on the corner, there is a building that is that was an open space on the other corner. And then came the Bryden House, which has had many different, has many different businesses been in there since. I guess there's a doctor in there now. Then came where the hardware store is was the bicycle shop. And there was a living quarters up above that. The next building was the Elmwood Hotel, and that's been remodeled, you know, into apartments, that part of it. And also, the apartments taken what was Young's Meat Market and Waite's Shoe Store, and where Adamson Bridges Grocery Store used to be is where the Gailmark Dress Shop is now. And then after Mr. Fowler's, I don't know if I told you that furniture store that burned belonged to Loring and Fowler, but anyway, after that burned, he built a little addition on the end of that building and had his furniture store there. And then, of course, Mr. Carter took it after Mr. Fowler died. Did I say Loring Fowler? I hope I did. Mm-hmm. I say Loring Valiumson many times. Loring Fowler died. Mr. Carter took over the... he was then the organist up at the Reformatory, Robert Carter, Sr. And then they built the building over on Main Street. And Joe's father, started his little shoe repair shop there. And of course his son and grandson now are running it. Then on the other side of the track, if you start from the Harper Christian's Church down Church Street, first was a double house, and then a long low building that housed the plumbing shop and all the supplies for the plumbing shop. Then there was a rather tall, it was three stories high, building where the Hudson National Bank is now. And the big fire that we had in 1932 destroyed all that. You probably have heard this, that the fire started in the fire station and spread very rapidly and destroyed all those buildings and hopped over into, embers flew over and started fires over on Derby Street and everything. The firemen were trapped upstairs, the recreation hall was upstairs, and the firemen were trapped up there. And they lost all the apparatus and everything else. But the town of Acton came down. They were the first one to get there, and they saved all the other business, all the rest of the business area. But that particular area was, and that three-story building was damaged some, but they managed to save it. That had the barber shop in it at that time. And then Charlie Hogan bought it and had an ice cream parlor downstairs, and he lived upstairs. The other block, which the Batomios built, the next block, that long block, was built after the Harvey Wheeler School was built, because there was a house in there that was moved away before that was built. And all that clearing was done to construct the Harvey Wheeler School. They moved the livery stable down off the livery stable was beside the Helper Christian's Church, and they moved it down across. Did Charlie tell you this?
Yeah.
They moved it down across the railroad track, and they had to, because it was just on wood rollers, I think they're about 8 inches of wood rollers, and they had a man on each roller to keep it straight, and a horse on a capstan, turning the capstan to pull the, pull the thing along, and it had to be moved on Palm Sunday because of the trains. They drove it, got it up to the crossing, and then had to wait until there was perhaps a half, three quarters of an hour, no trains, and get it across the passenger track. The further tracks were not used so much, but the ones nearest to the gates were, and they got it across there, and they moved it. There were no buildings around in back of the association halls. They moved it down across Edwardson and Soberg. It's now Edwardson and Soberg's. It was torn down and rebuilt, but that's the location of it. That's where they moved it to. That was the livery stable. And then along there on that side of the street, there was a lot of small stores. First was Miss Dowsett's boarding house, and then there was a little luncheonette that Mr. Waite ran. And then Peanut Adams had a little grocery store. And then that building on the corner is there. It, to me, is fairly new because I remember all this construction. That was a vacant lot at that time. And of course, the printing, I don't know what's in that other building now across that brick building across there. I don't know whether Jimmy Blackburn's printing press is in there or not. It was for a while. But those garages, of course, I remember all those garages having been built. Even the one across from the Derby, what is now the West Concord West Concord Mall is that was the Derby Estate.
Awesome.
That was the Derby Estate, and we tore those buildings down to build.
He was connected with the post office.
He was the postmaster at one time. Mm-hmm. I mean. You know, that was political appointees, and every time we had a change of administration, we had a change of postmaster. And at that time, Emily Hannon was his assistant postmistress, and she was Rose Kennedy's aunt, sister to Rose Kennedy's mother. And, of course, John Hannon wrote Joanna's other, Anna was it? Well, anyway, Rose's aunt and uncle. Their uncle worked in the reformatory, and her aunt was in the post office. And my aunt went to school with her mother, yeah, up in Acton. But that was the things. And of course, then around on Main Street, on the right hand side, there were none of those stores left. I guess it's Thor Realty. It was at one time across from Carter's anyway. Yeah. Was Jewett's Market, and then they moved everything out there to build those. The Harvey Wheeler School, and of course the West Concord School was on the corner, and that's where none of the schools are left. I was too rough on them because none of the schools are left that I know. I don't know just how much more of that you would like. Then the Union Church was built.
That was the first church in West Concord?
Well, no, there was another one. I've learned when I was looking for the dates, you know, for you, and when I learned that they did have another small congregation up in the Westvale end of town, but of course that's about three miles up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little too far for people to go in bad weather. So they went mostly to the reformatory, to church. Mr. Batt was a chaplain up there, and they went up there to church. And 1893, I think I've got all the dates for you here. The 1893, I think, was finally a group of nine men of different religions formed an association and met in Warner's Hall, which was over Adams and Bridges' store, until funds could be raised. And I've learned that in April 1893, I got these dates for it, $3,000 was raised, and a contractor was awarded to a Mr. Haynes for $4,000 to build a church which would accommodate 300 parishioners, and it was to be finished in Cyprus. The church was dedicated February 6, 1894, and the mortgage was burned February 6, 1903. That's pretty good in 19 years, isn't it? There were 16 covenanters, plus one who received baptism on January 13, 1899. Apparently the other people were just transfers from other parishes. And the Reverend William Batt, who was the prison chaplain and leader of the movement, organized the church formally, I'm sorry. The first minister served only 1 year. He was the Reverend H.D. Buckingham. Since this was 1890, I never knew him, but I have known every one of them since. The Reverend Walter E. Campbell, 1890 to 1908. Reverend Silas N. Adams, 1908 to 1915. The church was remodeled in 1910 during his incumbency. Reverend Alfred Wheeler Stone was 1916 to 1936. Reverend Kenneth R. Teed, 1936 to 1945. Reverend Ernest Swetland, 1947 to 1949. Reverend Edwin Nyland, 1949 to 64. Reverend Richard W. Bauer, 1964 to 72. Reverend J. William Arnold, 1972 and 73. And the present pastor is Reverend Foster Freeman, 1973. I've been told that the first house on Derby Street was the first railroad station, but the building at the junction of the Boston and Maine and New Haven lines is the one I have known. On the other side of the track was a tower which regulated the signals and the long freight houses, turntable, and Y. The Y is still in use for shifting freight cars. We did have one wreck when an engineer got excited when he realized his train had come uncoupled. He was traveling east, which is downgrade, and had he merely slowed down and let the train catch up with him, it all would have been well. But unfortunately, he started backing up, and when the two connected, there was a big jackknife action, and they were all empty. They were low cars. They were not boxcars. And they just piled up like jackstraws. It was really funny. There was one standing right on end, and it was right up above, it was taller than the depot. It was really the funniest sight you ever saw. And he'd been all right if he just kept going and let the train catch up to him.
Were you aware of a separate identity of West Concord?
We were at that time, very definitely. So because we didn't have, I think transportation was partly at the bottom of that. Mm-hmm. And of course there were no houses from Baker Avenue except the Sheehan farm on that side of the farm until we got way down to where Route 2 pretty near, just about down to where Route 2 is. The houses were very, and all the, there were only one, let's see, I can remember most of those houses beyond Route 2 being built. There were two right just beyond what is now Route 2 on the left. And then there was nothing until you get down to the house by the overhead bridge, that big house by the overhead bridge on that side of the street. And there was the only house that was on the other side of the street was right on the corner of the old road to Nineacuff Corner and Main Street. And that was the Hosmer House. It's been torn down, of course. That's now the Concord Professional Building, I guess. But there was nothing on that side. And then up at West Concord from Crest Street down, there were only two or three houses along there. I remember that big house on the corner and all those houses being built too. I think there's one, two, three, four houses there that are not post-war houses. I think the Hanson's house, I'm sure, was built before that. It might have been built in the 40s, but it isn't very old either. And all those other houses are post-war houses. Mm-hmm. So it was very sparsely settled, and that was one reason for it. And then, of course, we were commercial end of the town. We were the industrial end of the town. That was deliberately done because they wanted to keep the other end of town for what they call bedroom area now. And it was distinctly, but I truthfully, I never felt it anymore. I had a very difficult time anyway in school, you see, with the French name of Camo, and being a Protestant, it was very difficult for me because those who were not Protestants, religious feelings were very strong at that time. If you had a French name, you were not supposed to be a Protestant.
But
and West Concord was more the Catholic.
And more the Catholic area, because a great many of them worked in the reformatory. And then I was a very sensitive child too, and I'd cry very easily. And the people in the reformatory kind of looked down on us working people. And it wasn't until I got quite a lot older that I realized what phonies they were. and of course, the girls girls didn't have much opportunity to do things in my childhood either. Mother kept very strict. That's one thing that was very different. Mother kept very strict watch over us. We weren't permitted to get into things like. Well, they just looked after us very constantly. We didn't. As I say, when we used to play on the chair factory, I'm sure my mother never found it out. And we were just restricted because the playground wasn't even built till after World War I. And but our place was a congregating place. I think possibly Mother engineered that too, as I think back, because all the kids in the neighborhood used to play in our yard. We had a big barn. And we used to play hide and seek, and we used to play all the games. We used to make up our own games. We used to make our own dolls out of clothespins and all this sort of thing. We had to use a lot of ingenuity. I think probably stood us well. And then on rainy days, I don't know how my mother stood it, but there used to be 10 or 15 of us in that attic of that house in number 8 Maple, because I'm number 8 Maple Street at that time. And we just congregated at our house. And
this is on Commonwealth Avenue.
No, we lived on Maple Street.
I said.
Just off of Commonwealth Avenue. I was going to say we
moved.
We moved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you asked me about the business. The Camo business really started in 1898 when Edward A. Camo came to Concord and formed a partnership with Gilbert Grimes, a stonemason. The first work that was undertaken was construction on the street railway, Concord Main and Hudson Street Railway. They had one pair of horses. Mr. Grimes was a stonemason, and they did odd jobs. Jobbing was what they really started out doing. Mrs. Grimes did the keeping and caused the breakup of the partnership by using the funds for her own purposes, even then. But Mr. Grimes came to work, so Papa took over the business, and Mr. Grimes came to work for I'll tell you some of the dates here now, because 1903 they had completed the barn and double house on Maple Street and moved the family over there, and then he began construction of the single house on the next lot, and Charles was born in the double house on December 19th, 1904. In February 1905, while logging in Boxborough, a log got loose from the load and rolled off, crushing Dad's leg. He was laid up for 2 months, and Mother was a practical nurse and cared for him with a 2-month-old baby. It was many months before he could walk without a cane, and on December 23rd, 1906, we moved into the single house, conducting the business from the office in the house until June of 1930, when we moved to what had been the Sheehan Farm, where we conducted the business in the same way from the house. Building foundations for homes was the purpose of the business. This meant excavating the cellar with a horse-drawn scoop and laying up the walls of fieldstone by hand. Later, when cement floors became into use, then this too was done by hand. Mm-hmm. Soon after the turn of the century, about 1905, I think, he was hired to haul the fire apparatus with his horses, and continued to do this until the apartment was mechanized after World War I. The cleaning of the sidewalks and road after snowstorms was delegated to him at about the same time. At first, the roads were only dragged by a plank at the back of the sledge so as to preserve the roads for sleighing. The sidewalks had a special plow, and since almost everyone walked to work or to the train, the men and horses were often out all night. Snow was hauled from corners and dumped into the river, and many of the youngsters liked to have a job loading the ponds. In 1938, when Hurricane Doris devastated the area, he cleared the streets and brought lumbermen from Maine to help in the cleanup of the whole area. There were over 90 men in the crew at that time. A dead Edward A. Comeau died May 27, 1955. And on January 1st, 1957, my brother Charles E. Comeau, my nephew Deanie Comeau, and I, Edith M. Bailey, incorporated the business under the name of E.A. Comeau and Company.
The trees that gave it its name, and also helped in the construction of Galland Road, Riverside Avenue, and Upland Road. He built the baseball field on the Percy Rideau playground, and he also built the baseball field and tennis courts at the Peter Bulkley playground. He rebuilt the old North Bridge at one time, too, under John M. Kies. He also rebuilt the bridge on Monument Street and the bridge over the Concord River over in Nineka Corner or on Fitchburg Turnpike, and also the dam at the Essabet Mill had to be rebuilt at one time. We did all that work. He did many unusual things. I mean, at one time, I don't know about it, but as long as we have plenty of room there, I'll say that one time we had a call from the fire department that somebody over at White Pond was digging a well, and it caved in on them, and they didn't know what to do. They had tried everything they could think of to do. So he went over with a horse and buggy, of course, and he took a big hunk of it, and they knocked the head out of it, the two ends out of it, and they put it over the man. They had to take up the floor. The thing was so close to the house was the problem, between the house and a bank, and the fireman couldn't get in, so he went into the house and took up the floor and put the hogshead over the man and told him to start trying to work himself out of it, because he knew that if he didn't, his circulation was going to be cut off. So the man did, and then our men helped him, you know, got around him and helped. The hogshead was big enough so they could work. I got it out. They got him out, and he took him to the hospital. I don't think they took him to the hospital because we didn't have a hospital. And anyway, he recovered. And what do you know? We got a bill for repairing the floor in the living dining room.
Oh no!
Yes, we did. That's just one of the funny things. One of the funny things that happened, because we moved furniture too. They used to go with the horses. Down, they've gone down to Rhode Island and way up in New Hampshire, and if they'd be gone 2 or 3 days when they take a load of furniture. And I know one time they went down to Rhode Island on snow, and then before they got back the snow was gone, and the poor horses had to drag the snow. Fortunately, they took the load down. They had empty sleds coming home, but it was pretty tough.
Well, the Comeau family business and 20th century life has been very interconnected.
Oh yes, it's gone right on, and it's growing. Of course, it's growing now with the development of the Concord Green. It really has grown into something, because that was my home for a great many years. I lived there for 40 years. Mm-hmm. 42 years I lived. I'm the only one in the family that did. Isn't that strange? We moved there in 1930. Mother died in 44 and Papa in 55. And I stayed on until 72. So I don't think it, although it's known as the Comeau Farm, it really... Really, I'm the only Comeau that lived there any length, the longest of any of them. It was the Sheehan farm for many years. I don't know if you know the history of that place. It was originally a Hosmer place, originally. And it began over here at the river. I don't know how far south it went, but I know all this area and all the Allen farm area and all that area that we own over there was all in that part of that Hosmer grant. So I'm still living on the Hosmer grant.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of amusing. I mean, unless you really stop and think about it, because so many changes have come over the years. I've known that, see, the Bakers were there. when I remember, the Bakers were there. And then the Allens and then the McMillans. I don't even know who owns it now. But that was the original Hosmer House, that one that's on this side of Route 2. That's where the Hosmers lived. And then when the oldest boy wanted to get married and have the house, they built the house that I lived in on what is now Main Street. It wasn't Main Street then, it was County Road, which goes right around in front of the house. Put them over there to live, and they lived there. They owned it from the time of the King's Grant until the old maids died, and Mr. Sheehan bought it.
Mr. The Sheehan family owned it for 75 years, and then we bought it. So it's only had three owners. That particular section has only had three owners, but the rest of it has had many owners.
Yeah. Are there some families?
Oh yes, I should have. Yeah. Well, there's let's see, the Derbys. Of course, I spoke about the Derbys. Ben Derby was our postmaster, and his wife was a beautiful contralto singer. She's still living, by the way. She's in a nursing home up in West Groton, Caroline Derby. I think she's 95 years old now. And Ben was the son, only son. See, I think his father's name was, I can't remember whether, yes, Ben was his father, and Ed was his uncle. I could just, they had this dairy, and we used to go over there and get our milk. That's one of the old families. They're not one of the original settlers. The Whitneys, of course, I spoke about them. Hayden Whitney ran the Rexall store, and the Whitney Coal and Grain Company was his father's business. George Whitney's grandfather, George's name for his grandfather. And Otis, of course, is very well known, too. They're not really one of the old families. There was a William Wood, too, who lived up on Main Street, and he was associated with the woolen mills in Maynard. Then the Nagels, Miss Nagel was one of the teachers, in fact, my first grade teacher, and her father and uncle were both active politically. The Russells, George Russell, I can't remember what his father's name was. He was the deacon of the Union Church, and we always called him Deacon Russell. I doubt if I can remember what his name was. He was one of the people that were active at the time that I can remember. Judge Chase lived up on the hill at the end of Highland Street. It faced Main Street. It was Main Street address, but it was really at the end of Highland Street. It's up on that ledge. And that old house that still stands there. And he wasn't a judge. His son was the judge. His name was Abile Chase. And his daughter, Edith Chase, was assistant librarian for many years. And it's the house next to that that Dan Hayes bought and tore down and rebuilt. It was where the Fitzgeralds lived when they lived here in Concord. And are in the town. Of course, the money people were at the other end of the town, so they were the, naturally, they were the selectmen, and they were the officials, and so forth. And of course, Ruth Wheeler has the record of those, the Whitneys and the Woods and the Dunlops. Oh yes, Mr. Dunlop built all those houses down Francis and Shirley and Prairie Street down in that way. He developed. We call that the Dunlop Village when it was first built, and he was very influential. He lived on Main Street too, but those houses down in that area are what he built. And of course Mr. Batt was very influential, as I've told you, because his family, I don't know really, and Dr. Isaiah Pickard, I don't know if anybody's mentioned him yet. His daughter still lives in the house on Highland Street. Do you know that Lib? She worked in the library too. And he was our only doctor at that time. We later had a couple of others. But we mostly had, they mostly lived downtown. I suppose people down there could afford doctors better than we could. But I don't know of anybody else. I should remember more people, too. I mean, some of them we had such short connection with them, you know, when you were small that you don't really remember. Archie Simpson, for instance, he ran a dry goods store. He had only materials, men's suitings and things like that. Well, he was in that same building with the Erdang London store, but there have been a great many changes over the year. I can remember that piece between what is now the 5 and 10 and the auto shop. When that was built, there was a meat market. What's Condon's Meat Market? And John, Condon's Market, it was their father that started that. And Mr. Collins, his brother-in-law, worked with him. And then what was in there besides the Oh, there's a grocery store, and there's been two or three grocery stores in there at different times. Red and White was in there at one time, and Benny Benson worked in there.
What nationalities do you recall?
Well, I tell you, of course, I don't know. As far as I knew, most of the reformatory officers were... They had some of them were Catholic. Of course, the Lawtons and the Frawleys and the Sheehans and the Lees and those people were all
Irish.
Irish, those were the Irish. And then I think most of the others were Yankees. I know the Freemans came from down in Virginia, but they were what we would call not ethnically really anything mm-hmm. very strong. They had a special requirement in those days. They had to serve at least 2 years in a municipal police force before they could be accepted for application, and then they had to pay $500 to get their job. It was quite a thing at that time. I suppose that's one reason why they looked down on us, because they thought they had such good, strong political connections that they could do that. But they later got a reputation of never paying their bills and so forth. And you know, after you get to be in your teens, you soon begin to hear these things in a small community. Personally, I had the advantage of having a very close friend in the next door, and we, as a matter of fact, we looked so much alike we were often taken for sisters. And I used to go to church with her, and she used to go to church with me, which was very uncommon.
The division was strong.
The division was very strong. The division was very strong. I don't know exactly when the Catholic Church was built, but as you say, it was Our Lady Help of Christians. And but I do know there was a great deal of feeling, and I do remember my mother telling about the oration of the priest from Maynard, who came to dedicate the Catholic Church, and some of the things he said. And she said, even his own parishioners were pretty much upset, because they had begun, the town was small enough, they had begun by that time to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
See, and when you know people, you don't mitigate against them like you do when they're strangers. You just like them. If you like them as a person, then you forget whether they are black or white, or mm-hmm. whether they're Catholic or Protestant. They used to be the same strange antipathy between Presbyterians and Methodists and Baptists and everything. You know, they used to, they all the denominations used to be the same way. But we've grown so much broader mind and so much more ecumenically inclined. Did you know that Percy Rideout's twin sister is still living? She was a teacher at Concord High School. She's presently in the Suburban Manor nursing home. But she was Percy Rideout's twin sister. They only had two children. The Rideouts only had two children. They lived on Winthrop Street. And Gertrude taught Concord High, and Percy, of course, was killed in World War I. And then his son was a captive in Italy in World War II.
Were there many Italians?
Yes. I forgot to mention that. I got off on a tangent. Yes, and they had a terribly hard time. I think every ethnic group had the same thing. I know that the Irish down in the center had the same problem. They were more or less ostracized as we were. It was as strong a division as there was between Concord and West Concord. I think there was a lot more. I think the wars had a great deal to do with the coming down to a common standard plane. The people were a lot more snobbish then than they are now. They were the same people, but they were, you know, they didn't go to public schools and all that sort of thing. And then when some of them decided they wanted to send their children to the public schools, they began to know each other, and things began to soften a great deal. And I'm so happy to see it. I'm so happy to see the meshing of intelligences and, you know, of doing things together. It's good.
Thank you.
Okay.